our prelude as we begin this morning's service, Sicilian by Lantier, performed by Amber. Thank you, Amber. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. I'm Rev Ralph, and I've been part of the Prairie community for almost 24 years. So I'm introducing myself not as someone new, but as a he, him, and welcome you to this service on this autumn day. Some of us are bringing our best selves to this space, and some of us are bringing our struggling selves. All of us are welcome here, and all of us are loved. All of us are imperfect, but we're here to drop our defenses and trust that what happens in this space is powerful and life-giving. Together we affirm that this day and our being together can make each of us braver, more compassionate, and wiser than when we woke up this morning. We welcome you here. And as we move into our service, willing to be authentic with each other, honest within ourselves, and open to connection in all its forms. Our chalice lighting this morning, The Persistent Flame by Amy Brooks. Joanna is going to be reading the chalice.
Even as the days grow shorter, and our homes shrink smaller, and our wicks burn lower, and our will to endure flickers, we light this chalice to kindle a flame of warmth as a reminder of the connection that draws us in to a community that opens us up in gratitude for the breath in our lungs, for the love in our hearts, for the gift of this day, alive.
Our opening music, hymn number 391. And let's just stay seated because we're only singing just this one verse. So it's easier that if we remain in a sitting place. Number 391. Voice still and small. We are delighted and proud to welcome new members joining our congregation. Today we want to take a few moments to recognize our newest members. So those new members, when I call your name, please move forward to the front of our meeting room as you are able, as I read your name. Allison Brooks Mix. Right in fear, Allison. Cindy McAllister. Cindy's here. Here's Cindy. Right up here, Cindy. Come on. You can stand up here. Yeah. Suzanne Oliver. Here's Suzanne. Dawn Reagan-Bodden. And baby poet. We've got a poet with us. Today is a day of poetry. Poet is with us. And now will our president, Ken Skog, come forward to welcome our newest members.
Morning, everyone. We at Prairie UU Society welcome you as new members to our community this morning. You have come to worship, play, work, and grow among us. Ours is a free fellowship. We have no creeds, and you are free and encouraged to bring your ideas and beliefs to this fellowship and to share with others. I invite you to join with us in this search for meaning and purpose in life, informed by our individual beliefs and the traditions of Unitarian Universalism.
Joining Prairie UU Society means being part of this gathered community, supporting others and being supported in return, and being willing to contribute your time and talents as needed. If you, as new members, will join us in this mission and work, please say, I will. I will. Okay. And will our Director of Religious Exploration, Karen Deaton, please come forward to welcome our newest members.
Yeah. Some of our new members clearly bring their children into our community. Will all the kids here please listen to this part? This is for you. We've already been getting to know Poet, baby Poet in RE, and we are so glad they're with us. Kids, all you kids, if you promise to be kind to them and learn with them as you all grow together, say loud and clear, we will.
And now will the members of our congregation respond with the words printed in your order of service. Let us begin, members. We receive you with open hands and hearts as you join us once again, renew our community. As the prairie stretches out until it becomes one with the sky, let us reach out to touch and be one with the natural world and with one another. Now, let me ask, will the new members please introduce yourself and say a few words about yourself? Let us begin with Cindy. Oh, here we go. Sorry. Test one.
Oh, okay. My name is Cindy McAllister. I moved here from Iowa. Before that, Florida. I'm from upstate New York. I followed my daughter now four times. Like I said before, this is it. This is it. And that's it. I'm so happy to be here.
My name is Allison Mix. I was born here. I grew up here, a Unitarian back in those days, at first Unitarian. I then lived abroad for 40 years, including 20 in London, where I was a Unitarian. They have them over there. And closer to your mom. Moved back here 12 years ago, and married my wonderful husband, John, who's with his grandchildren this weekend, but I'm sure you'll see him in the future.
Hi, I'm Suzanne Oliver. I have been in Madison a few years, but I moved to this particular neighborhood in July, buying a house, and so it's new to me house. And I just got a big yes on coming here. And The first thing that drew me was the prairie in the front of the church here. I love that. And it just feels like a natural yes to be here. And so I'm happy about that. It feels like a village, too. So.
Thank you. Poet wants to go first. What do you want to say? What do you want to say? Huh? Poet is 13 months old and uses they, them pronouns and likes crawling a lot. My name is Dawn, and I use either she, her, or they, them, whatever, is fine. And we also have been in, I was at First Unitarian for a really long time, and came over here and have been very, very welcomed by this community, and I'm just so grateful for all of you, the WOW group and the other parents and the LGBT folks and Karen and Jesse and Ollie and all of you have just, and the circle dinners, and it's just been a wonderful experience and so, so grateful that we are here.
And now we will welcome our new members by singing "Consider Yourself One of Us." Please let us rise in body or spirit. The lyrics are on the back of your order of service. Thank you all. Thank you. And now it's time for a story for all ages. Our story today is "New Year at the Pier" by April Halprin. Waylon, illustrated by Stephanie Jorish. And it's going to be read by Karen Deaton, our Director of Religious Exploration. And kids and adults who are interested can come forward and gather around Karen to listen to the story. And then after the story, we'll sing our youth out, and those lyrics are in our order of service.
Come on up where you can see the pictures. Downstairs in RE today, we're going to be learning about the Jewish high holidays, including Rosh Hashanah. And this book is New Year at the Pier. It has a subtitle, A Rosh Hashanah Story. Izzy, this is not our Izzy, this is a different Izzy. Izzy loves this changing time of year. Some days sunglasses, some days sweaters, apples, honey, the sound of the shofar, and his favorite part of Rosh Hashanah, Tashlich. Everyone makes I'm sorry lists before Tashlich. Mom's at the piano, at the patio table, writing fast. Miriam is on the grass, thinking. Izzy puts a rock on his paper so it won't blow away. He doesn't make a list. He draws pictures. But he does count on his fingers. 1, 2, 3. 3 things he's sorry for. What is Izzy sorry for? He sticks up one finger, for drawing on Miriam's forehead while she was asleep. 2 fingers, for losing mom's ring at the grocery store. 3 fingers for breaking Mrs. Bickerson's drum, the old one they weren't supposed to even touch. Is that it? Just 3? Suddenly, Izzy remembers there's one more. Oh, he wishes there weren't. He wishes he could forget this one. Slowly, he puts up 4 fingers for promising he wouldn't tell anyone that Ben sucks his thumb, and then telling. On Rosh Hashanah, as soon as they get to the synagogue, Izzy joins his friends in playing tag. "You're it," a kid says, pointing a finger at Izzy. Izzy looks at his own finger. He runs over to his sister. "Miriam," he whispers, "I'm sorry I drew on your forehead." "Huh?" "I'm sorry I drew space dog." "Oh, that, no big deal," she says. "Okay," he says, and runs off with his friends. When he stops to rest, Miriam looks at her list and then at Izzy. "I'm not gonna call you Big Snot anymore, I'm sorry." "I like being Big Snot," he says, pulling a ribbon from her hair. "Izzy," Miriam says, and stomps on his foot. "Hey," Izzy yells. Mom walks up. "Peace, kids," she says, putting up her 2 fingers. Izzy looks at his own 2 fingers. This one is gonna be harder. "Mom," Izzy says, looking at his shoe, "I'm sorry I lost your ring." "I know you're sorry, sweetie. Thanks. I'm sorry for something too." His eyes get big. "Mom's sorry?" "I'm sorry for always being on the phone," she says. "I'll try not to answer it when you and I are playing together. Okie dokie." Mom squeezes his hand. He squeezes back. The door is open. It's time to take their seats. When services are over, everyone walks to the beach. Rabbi Neil, Cantor Livia, and all the families. At the top of the hill, Izzy counts 3 fingers. 3 figures, Mrs. Bickerson and her 2 dogs. Izzy looks at his 3 fingers. His heart pounds like her drum used to. But maybe he doesn't have to say it to her right now. Yes, he does. No, he doesn't. "Well, look who's here. Hello, Izzy," says Mrs. Bickerson. "Hi, Mrs. Bickerson," he mumbles. "Good heavens," Mrs. Bickerson cries as the dogs drag her up the street. "Sorry to be running off, dear. Come visit this week." Whew, Izzy runs down the hill to catch the others. When he gets to the pier, Rabbi Neil is saying, "Tashlich is a time we apologize for the things we wish we hadn't done. Tashlich means to throw. We throw away things we don't like or don't need. Tashlich is like cleaning your heart's closet. A new year, a clean heart." Just this summer, Izzy and Miriam cleaned their tiny closet, their toy closet, and gave a lot away. Now it seems huge. They all troop up to the pier singing Avinu Malkeinu, Avinu Malkeinu. The melody moves inside Izzy to in a sad, happy way. He feels a part of the wind, a part of the waves, a part of everybody singing. At the head of the pier, everyone crowds around Rabbi Neil and Ben's dad. They both put shofars to their lips. See this big horn they're each holding?
I know my dad blew the shofar.
That is so cool that Matt blew the shofar. They blow the shofar. Whose note will last the longest? Izzy and Miriam pretend they're blowing shofars and count to 10. Take a deep breath in and see how long you can blow out. They run out of breath, but the men keep blowing. Izzy runs around in 10 circles. He's very dizzy, but the men keep blowing. Finally, Rabbi Neil's shofar runs out of sound. Ben's dad squawks out 1 last note. Everybody laughs and claps. And now it's time. Mom hands them pieces of old bread. Izzy rips off a piece and whispers, "This is for drawing space dog on Miriam's forehead," and throws it into the water. "For Mom's ring," he says, tossing another sorry, into the sea. He breathes the salty air. His heart feels cleaner. And look at those seagulls. They love Tashlich. So do the fish. Why do the seagulls and fish love Tashlich? Because, Amelia?
Because they like the bread.
They like the bread. Yeah. Suddenly, Ben is right next to him. Izzy, I'm sorry I never helped you find your yellow notebook. His notebook? Oh, that's right. Ben didn't help look for it. Just hearing Ben say he's sorry makes Izzy feel better. That's okay, he says. He smiles down at their four shoes side by side, and then he remembers the fourth thing on his list. He has to tell Ben. Well, maybe he doesn't have to. It's hard to say sorry, isn't it? Maybe he doesn't have to? Yes. Yes, he does. They sit together on a bench looking out to sea. Ben is bouncy and hummy. Izzy is slouchy. Okay, Izzy takes a deep breath of ocean air. Ben, I'm sorry I told your secret. About sucking my thumb? Yeah, the seagulls caw. It was mean. I'm sorry. He wishes Ben would say something. Finally, Ben says, Izzy? Yes. We've been friends for a long, 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 long time, right? Right. So, because we've been friends for a long, 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 long time, you are 100% forgiven. Really? Izzy looks at Ben. Ben smiles. Okay, and from now on, I promise to keep your secret secret, Izzy says, feeding a piece of bread to Ben. And I promise to help you look for everything you lose, Ben says. They toss their pieces of bread out to the fish. Izzy's heart feels free, as big as the ocean. But what about Mrs. Bickerson? She went away with her dogs. Izzy decides he will talk to her soon. He throws another piece into the sea for Mrs. Bickerson's drum. Ben and Izzy toss the last bits into the wind. Izzy loves this changing time of year. Some days sunglasses, some days sweaters. The sound of the shofar and the salty smell of the sea. Time to think about his family and the whole wide, windy world. Everyone sings one last song. Then they slowly walk home, holding hands in a family and friends chain with empty bread bags and clean, wide-open hearts. The end. We're gonna go downstairs now.
Let us now embrace a moment of silent meditation. I'll ring the chime to begin and at the closing. The morning was crisp. The air was a little cooler than it was yesterday afternoon when it reached almost 80 degrees. Some of us are discarding our shorts and putting on long pants, getting back to wearing a sweater. Of course, we're talking about the first days of fall, also known as the season of pumpkin spice and everything nice. But like the falling leaves and cooling temperature, there's a debate that happens every year. Autumn or fall? The pre-winter season of apple cider and colorful leaves goes by either autumn or fall. They're synonymous. Autumn, a word dating back to the late 1300s, became popular as an alternative to the word that was then used, harvest. And the word fall likely comes from the fall of the leaves, or falling of the leaves. Those were phrases that poets would use. And according to Merriam-Webster, people shortened the phrase to the single word fall in the 1600s. Fall is the word of choice here in America. Autumn is the go-to in Britain. It wasn't until the 1800s that American English and British English took unofficial stance on these words. It's still unclear why America clings so strongly to fall. Some speculate it has to do with daylight saving time. Spring forward, fall back. So this morning I'm going to fall, excuse the pun, back in time to the early 1800s as a framework for focusing on poets and poetry. That's when we, Unitarian Universalists, received a tremendous influence from the philosopher and theologian, poet, Ralph Waldo Emerson. His claim was that God, humanity, and nature interconnected, they're unified, and that as humans, we can come to understand that unity through personal experience, that no written or human intermediary is required for this transaction to develop. We are here as UUs because we hold that humans possess the capacity to discern what is true and beautiful and can act in accordance with those discoveries. In his introduction to his essay, Emerson in 1836 suggests that rather than relying on religious authority and tradition to understand the world, we should spend time in nature and intuit answers for ourselves. And we shouldn't just observe nature. We should actively consider what nature means or does to us in transformational ways. In chapter one, Emerson advocates for spending time alone in nature. For example, by looking up at the stars away from city lights, you can find a greater transcendence to the world. Emerson describes this as experiencing sublimity. This refers to a lived experience of intense, overwhelming emotion that transcends the plain ordinariness of everyday living. Emerson suggests that nature produces such a state within us. Enjoying solitude in nature separates a person from the normal ordinariness of living. Most people take the stars for granted since they shine nightly. But if a person opens themselves up to nature's influence and adopts a simple, childlike, curious nature, you will be captivated and you will find yourself in a enlarged sense of awesomeness. In chapter 6, Emerson suggests that through words, and particularly through symbols, the poet is the one who is able to guide the reader to see the world from new angles and perspectives, transforming our vision of ourselves and the world. So, let's begin by exploring autumn through the eyes of poets. First, John Keats. Keats often explored themes of nature and the passage of time in his poetry. And in his Ode to Autumn, he celebrates the season as a time of abundance, maturity, reflecting on its beauty, but also its passing quickly from our eyes. Season of mists and mellow fruitfulness, close bosom friend of the maturing son, conspiring with him how to load and bless with fruit the vines that round the thatch eaves run, to bend with apples the mossed cottage trees, and fill all fruit with ripeness to the core, to swell the gourd and plump the hazel shells with a sweet kernel, to set budding more, and still more, later flowers for the bees, until they think warm days will never cease, for summer has o'erbrimmed their clammy cells. Who hath not seen thee oft amid the store? Sometimes whoever seeks abroad may find thee sitting careless on a granary floor, thy hair soft lifted by the winnowing wind, or in a half-reaped furrow sound asleep, drowsed with the fume of poppies, while thy hook spares the next swath and all its twined flowers. And sometimes, like a gleaner thou dost keep steady thy laden head across a brook, or by a cider press with patient look thou watchest the last oozings hours by hours. Where are the songs of spring? Aye, where are they? Think not of them, thou hast thy music too, while barred clouds bloom the soft dying day and touch the stubble plains with rosy hue. Then in a wailful choir the small gnats mourn among the river sallows, borne aloft or sinking as the light wind lives or dies. And full-grown lambs loud bleat from hilly bone. Hedge crickets sing, and now with treble soft the redbreast whistles from a garden croft. Gathering swallows twitter in the skies. Keats explores a number of themes in To Autumn. He describes the lush, abundant landscapes of autumn, celebrating the rich colors and sounds and textures. The passage of time reflects on the transition from the ripeness of autumn to the barrenness of winter. And then there's a sense that nature is dying and it's not going to last forever what we are embracing. Keats subtly addresses the theme of mortality, using autumn as a metaphor for the later stages of life, where beauty and productivity are at their peak, but also nearing an end. Then there's the sensory experience, listening to the oozing of the apples and the making of apple cider. Keats emphasizes the sensory richness of autumn, hearing the crickets sing, engaging the reader's senses through the detailed imagery of sights, sounds, and smells. These themes collectively highlight Keats's appreciation for the natural world and his contemplation of life's fleeting yet bountiful, beautiful moments. Our next poem by Robert Frost, and Frost is no stranger to us. He's in our hymnal, hymn number 64, O Give Us Pleasure in the Flowers Today. Frost frequently uses nature as a backdrop for exploring complex human emotions and philosophical questions. Here is After Apple Picking. My long two-pointed ladder sticking through a tree toward heaven still, and there's a barrel that I didn't fill beside it, and there may be two or three apples I didn't pick upon some bough. But I am done with apple picking now. A sense of winter, sleep is on the night, the scent of apples. I'm drowsing off. I cannot rub the strangeness from my sight I got from looking through a pane of glass I skimmed this morning from the drinking trough and held against the world of hoary grass. It melted, and I let it fall and break. But I was well upon my way to sleep before it fell, and I could tell what form my dreaming was about to take. Magnified apples appear and disappear, stem end and blossom end, and every fleck of russet showing clear. My instep arch not only keeps the ache, it keeps the pressure of a ladder round. I feel the ladder sway as the boughs bend, and I keep hearing from the cellar bin the rumbling sound of load on load of apples coming in, for I have had too much for apple picking. I'm overtired of the great harvest I myself desired. There were 10,000 fruit to touch, cherish in hand, lift down, and not let fall, for all that struck the earth, no matter if not bruised and spiked with stubble, went surely to the cider apple heap as of no worth. One can see what will trouble this sleep of mine. Whatever sleep it is, were he not gone, the woodchuck would say whether it's like his long sleep, as I describe its coming on, or just some human sleep. Several themes are expressed in this after apple picking. It reflects the transition from autumn to winter, the passage of time, the cycles of life, and then work and fatigue. The speaker's weariness from apple picking serves as a metaphor for the exhaustion that comes from life's labors and the pursuit of one's goals. And then there's a sense of regret. The poem explores the dual feelings of satisfaction and regret. While the speaker has accomplished much, there is a sense of incompleteness, of missed opportunities. And then there's dreams and reality. The blurred line between the speaker's dreams and reality highlights the introspective nature of his poem as the speaker reflects on his experience and the long sleep that he's desiring. These themes collectively delve into the complexity of our human experience, the inevitability of aging, and the introspective contemplation of one's life and one's achievements. And let us now move to our third poem. Mary Oliver has three of her writings in our hymnal, number 490, Wild Geese, number 536, Morning Poem, and 696, To Live in This World. She is known for her keen observation of the natural world and its spiritual significance. Her poems often find beauty and wisdom in the changing seasons, encouraging readers to find solace and inspiration in nature. This is called The Journey. One day you finally knew what you had to do and began, though the voices around you kept shouting their bad advice, though the whole house began to tremble, and you felt the old tug at your ankles, mend my life, each voice cried, but you didn't stop. You knew what you had to do, though the wind pried with its stiff fingers at the very foundations, though their melancholy was terrible. It was already late enough and a wild night and the road full of fallen branches and stones. But little by little, as you left their voices behind, the stars began to burn through the sheets of clouds, and there was a new voice which you slowly recognized as your own that kept you company as you strode deeper and deeper into the world, determined to do the only thing you could do, determined to save the only life you could save. Now, in The Journey, Mary Oliver doesn't explicitly focus on autumnal themes. Instead, it centers on personal transformation and self-discovery. However, if you were to draw parallels to autumnal themes, we could consider these themes as embedded into her words. Transition and change. Much like autumn signifies a period of change, the journey is about personal transition. The speaker embarks on a path of self-discovery, leaving behind old constraints and moving toward a new beginning. Letting go. Autumn is a time when trees shed their leaves, symbolizing the act of letting go. Similarly, the poem speaks to the necessity of letting go of external pressures and voices to find one's own true inner voice. And then inner strength and renewal. Autumn can also be seen as a time of inner strength, preparing for the renewal that comes with spring. In the journey, the speaker finds inner strength to overcome obstacles and renew their sense of self. Each of the poems that we have shared this morning offer a unique perspective on autumn, using the season to delve into deeper themes of living, dying, and renewal, and more, much more. But I shall conclude with this from Mary Oliver. It's called Wild Geese. And I heard the geese this morning flying over by Lake Monona, where we live. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees and the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clear blue air, are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting over and over, announcing your place in the family of things. Maybe sometime during the week, when you're loading or unloading the dishwasher, you'll let your imagination take you to a place where you recall a time of autumnal beauty or a moment of joyful transformation. So may it be. Now is a time for our community to enjoy a moment for discussion around the focus of our theme today, relying upon our covenant of good relations as a guide to ensure all voices are welcome and relationships are valued. We have about 10 minutes for discussion, which should end in 10 minutes, hopefully. Please come forward if you have some comments, and we'll allow you to share the microphone.
I'm Mary, she, her, and this really, these poems all speak to me because autumn is the time of my life I am approaching. And although the winter is there, it's not quite welcome yet. The three poets have three different approaches. I won't try to interpret. I think Ralph did a wonderful job.
Oh, I think the microphone's on. Good. So I'm Steve Puntillo, and I went to the retreat, and I haven't had that much fun in probably 10 years to see Mary do the poetry and everybody else taking a stab at singing. I did my little thing, and I've never been in an environment where so many people were happy, you know, and they were all having a good time. I've been in a lot of other vintage clubs, motorbike clubs and stuff, but this organization, I have been blessed to be part of all of this. And that, and anyways, the retreat was just way over the top. And thanks for whoever helped me very much. I sure appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Do we have any comments on Zoom? No. Okay. Let us now share our offering. This morning, we share the offering with Porchlight's Dwelling Intervention Grants and Sustenance Program, which provides eviction prevention counseling and financial assistance to households facing eviction. Our offertory is In Autumn by McDowell, performed by Amber. Thank you, Amber. Lovely. Our closing words by Jim Hobart. Jim was a classmate of mine back in the late 50s at Meadville Seminary. Jim passed away a few years ago. He writes these: as we depart one from another, let our hearts be secure through every human season. Let our hearts be secure in seasons of anguish as in seasons of joy, in seasons of failure as in seasons of success, in seasons of uncertainty as in seasons of security. Let our hearts be secure in this dual reality. We are worthy recipients of love and support we can never earn, and we are worthy providers of love and support others cannot earn. Let our hearts be secure, for hearts know and understand and will respond if invited in. We close with our hymn number 52 in the gray hymnal, In Sweet Fields of Autumn, accompanied by Amber. Please rise in body or spirit. be seated. We just have a few announcements. Next Sunday, our guest speaker is Reverend Dr. Michael Schuler. He's no stranger to us. His presentation is titled, Don't Light a Candle and Don't Curse the Darkness. And today, we have an announcement. Barb?
You are all welcome to join us in our monthly prairie potluck. It is delicious and awesome. If you didn't bring anything or didn't know about it, you are still invited. We just need a few people to help rearrange the chairs and put the tables out for the food to be put on. So we will all be enjoying ourselves. Thank you.
Chris Porter has an announcement.
Seems like it wasn't that long ago I was announcing our pledge drive for 2024, and now it's time for our pledge drive for 2025. So anyway, pledge letters were sent out, so most of you probably got one in the mail recently. And I did not put in the goal amount in the letter, so I just wanted to tell you that the goal amount this year is $158,000. So hopefully we make it. Thanks very much. It's $20,000 more than last year.
At this time, we stop the recording.